Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
We're going to kick tonight off by having Mom Like a Shabbat candles. She's going to say a couple things, and then we'll have Sarah speak about Remy, and then we'll get into the Torah portion. But just really appreciate everything that's been said, everything Jason spoke, the environment being set, everything Megan just spoke to. And just to piggyback off of that, I just want to give words to what I feel like is happening with these Torah portions, because these particular Torah portions are core to who we are. And when you talk about being Hebrew and being a crossover people, which is what the word Hebrew means, it comes from these type of dynamics. I mean, there's a wealth of knowledge in these specific Torah portions because they are talking about the most major crossover in the scripture. So I think it's important for us to have an expectation that we can understand the dynamics of what does it actually mean to cross over, and what are all the intricacies of that. Things that may be complex, but Yahweh is, he's giving us time and he's giving us the opportunity to understand it in a simple and profound way. I almost feel like it's a, if this was in the marketplace in the world, it would be like we're getting information or understanding or wisdom concerning the most complex thing you can think of that produces and generates enormous amounts of wealth, but you get to go and understand it in a simple and profound way so that you can do the same thing. I feel like that's the value of what Yahweh is dispensing each and every Friday night, but particularly with understanding who we are. So don't think of it in terms of the marketplace, but a wealth of understanding of who you are is what's being dispensed tonight. And just to add to that window of time, that's one kind of element of this that produces urgency. But the other element is, I feel as if we're being forged. And when you look at the forging process, it does a couple things. And one of those things is it increases your impact strength. So think of it not only in terms of time, but what happens if you don't seize the opportunity? We will walk into a place that Yahweh asked us to walk into, and you will be impacted by something, and you might just snap. You might literally break. You don't have the level of strength because you haven't submitted to a process that's honestly being hammered. Trial by fire, right? A very tough process that produces a higher impact strength on the other side. It produces all kinds of things. Look into it. I won't get into it, but that's, I just want us to understand like the level of wealth that we are getting to understand. What does it mean to say we're a Hebrew? What does it mean to go down this path we're going and listen intently to understand about who you are? Okay. So Sarah, if you want to get up and share about Remy, and then I'm going to go ahead and read the Torah portion tonight so she can get her thoughts together. But go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Go ahead.
Remy, very heavy. And I feel like some of you guys made it look a little too easy. That's my personal opinion. Remy, for me this week was, I felt like there were some really good things and some really hard things. Really the exposure of where I don't trust Yahweh. I had a situation come up, hey, not right now, stop, for Shiloh at school, and it sent me into a little meltdown. And it just really exposed that I don't trust him like with her, and trust him to provide for her. And sorry. Oh my word. And I really had to confront that, that I know better. and how I've operated up into a certain point in my life of just doing it my own way and not being willing to like lay things down. And so I really wrestled with that this week and had to go back in. I think I was listening to the Vox to last week's when you talked about like feeling trapped. Like, what do you do when you feel trapped? And what I do is I self-preserve. And that's how I felt in that moment. It was like trapped. How am I going to get out of this? How am I going to make it right? How am I going to make her confident and tough? And, you know, and realizing I can't do that. And that I need him to be the one to do that, to teach me, to teach her. And I also think I don't give enough credit to Yahweh in her. And so as I worked that out and wrestled with that, I come to the end of the week. And when I sent that picture, if you saw it on Vox, of her holding Remy, was because she was like, if she could have lifted Remy on her own, I think she would have taken Remy from me. She just understood it. And she understood it as Yahweh. And it just caused me to remember what he did for me, because she's a remembrance, because I couldn't have kids and he gave her to me. And so that reminder of, I took care of you then, I took care of you now, I'm still taking care of you. But having to release the control of that so that I can reap the reward of that, if that makes sense. So yeah, that's kind of my little piece.
Sally stole it while she was talking to someone. I mean, I'm assuming you're taking it. You weren't just helping her talk.
All right, you guys want to stand? We'll read the Torah portion. All right, Exodus 15:19. For Pharaoh's horses were with his chariots, and his horsemen went into the sea, but Adonai brought the waters of the sea back over them. Yet Bnei Israel walked in the midst of the sea on dry ground. Then Miriam the prophetess, Aaron's sister, took a tambourine in her hand, and all the women went out after her with tambourines and with dancing, as Miriam sang to them. Sing to Adonai, for he is highly exalted. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. Then Moses led Israel onward from the sea of reeds. They went out into the wilderness of Shur, but they traveled 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink from the waters because they were bitter. On account of this, it was called Marah. So the people complained to Moses, saying, "What are we going to drink?" So he cried out to Adonai, and Adonai showed him a tree. When he threw it into the waters, they were made sweet. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. He said, "If you diligently listen to the voice of Adonai your God, do what is right in his eyes, pay attention to his mitzvot, and keep all his decrees, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians, for I am Adonai who heals you." Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. So they camped there by the waters. They journeyed on from Elim, and the entire community of Bnei Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after leaving the land of Egypt. But the whole congregation of Bnei Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Bnei Israel said to them, "If we only had died by the hand of Adonai in the land of Egypt, when we sat by pots of meat, when we ate bread until we were full. But you have brought us into the wilderness to kill this entire congregation with hunger." Then Adonai said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. The people will go out and gather a day's portion every day, so that I can test them to find out whether they will walk according to my Torah or not. So on the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather day by day." So Moses and Aaron said to all Bnei Israel, "In the evening you will know what Adonai has brought you out from the land of Egypt. And in the morning you will see the glory of Adonai, for he heard your complaining against him. What are we? You complain against us." Then Moses said, "Adonai will give you meat to eat in the evening and enough bread to fill you in the morning. Since Adonai hears your complaints that you mutter against him, what are we? Your complaining is not against us, but against Adonai." Moses said to Aaron, "Say to all the congregation of Bnei Israel, come near before Adonai, because he has heard your complaining." Then as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of Bnei Israel, they looked toward the wilderness, and the glory of Adonai appeared in the cloud. Adonai spoke to Moses, saying, I have heard the complaining of Bnei Israel. Speak to them, saying, at dusk you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am Adonai your God. So when evening fell, quails came up and covered the camp. Moreover, in the morning there was a layer of dew all around the camp. When the layer of dew was gone, on the surface of the desert was a thin, flake-like frost, as fine as the frost on the ground. When Bnei Israel saw it, they said to one another, what is it? For they did not know what it was. Then Moses said to them, it is the bread that Adonai has given you to eat. This is the word that Adonai has commanded. Every man is to gather according to his needs, an omer per person, according to the number of people per household. Each man is to take it for those who are in his tent. Bnei Israel did so, and some gathered more, some less. When they measured it with an omer, those who gathered more had nothing left over, and those who gathered less did not lack at all. Every man gathered according to his appetite. Also Moses said to them, let no one save any of it until the morning. However, they did not listen to Moses. Some of them preserved it until the morning, but it bred worms and rotted. So Moses was angry with them. So they gathered it morning by morning, each man according to his needs. And as the sun became hot, it melted. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each individual. So all the leaders of the community came and informed Moses. But he said to them, this is what Adonai has said. Tomorrow is a Shabbat rest, a holy Shabbat to Adonai. Bake whatever you would bake, and boil whatever you would boil. Store up for yourselves everything that remains to be kept until the morning. So they set it aside until morning, just as Moses instructed, and did not rot, nor were there any worms. Everybody ready? Who's gonna match? Who's gonna match tonight?
Ready.
All right.
Ready,
okay.
We're ready.
Everybody. Who didn't raise their hand? Who's not matching? Who wants to be forged so when you get confronted, you have the strength that you don't snap?
Yes, for sure.
Who's willing to endure the hammering to get to that place?
Yes.
We're going through the forging right now. Yeah, we're being hammered right now. Right? All right. Everybody's ready to go.
We're ready.
I didn't know if we should have read the Torah portion after I do the review, but we already decided to read it. So I just wanted you guys to know. So we just read the Torah portion. Obviously, you guys have been reading it all week long. But I want to take a step back into last week and just highlight some things. This is going to probably be awkward, and it's okay if you raise your hand. Who did not hear the boxes fully over the week from me? John? Mona? What about Regina? Did Dwayne? He did most of them. Okay. I would still encourage, even though we're into tonight, to go back and listen to those, only because I think that, so basically just to kind of give an overview of what I said and why I released Unbox in general is because last week was such a big week. Yeah. I think we had an hour to release, and it was two chapters, and it was our chapter. And I know I say that every time. But that chapter really is what being Hebraic means, which is being a crossover people. Mm-hmm. A nation was birthed after this happens. And so if we say that we are Hebraic and that means that we're crossover people, then crossing over from one system into another is our identity.
Yeah.
We are transitionaries. We are born for such a time as this because it's not just a random group of people that got a little hungry past religion.
Yeah.
It's happening all over the world.
Right.
He is blowing up religion because he's saying it is time to leave a system and move into another one. What I released on Vox was to get you hopeful that we probably shouldn't leave religion kicking and screaming and crying and dying because there's a lot of systems that we're going to have to leave. So let us be forged so that we don't snap when the next system happens to be...
Mm-hmm.
I won't even say it. I talked a little bit about it on Vox, and I kind of blew some things up. But right, there are some systems that he has spoken about in the scriptures. There are some things when he says that you are going to receive all truth. You are going to receive all truth, not Christian truth.
Yeah, right.
All truth.
Right.
So I'm not just talking about a system, but I'm talking about a system that's been taught that when we have said we are evangelical, biblical people, you are not biblical.
Yeah.
We have not been biblical.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
Because we don't see the cloud, we don't see the fire, and if we don't want to believe in the Old Testament, we aren't seeing people raising from the dead. Yeah. We're not seeing new creatures.
Yeah.
We're not seeing some things. Because we're still bound to systems that have said that you are bound to things that are from earth. My fire was just coming from a place of, I almost felt a check. I don't think we should move into the next Torah portion because we need some more time in that portion. And I felt like as I was releasing, I just felt like Yahweh was saying, that's that window of time, we got to keep going. So we're going to keep going. So we're going to go into the next Torah portion, but I do want to take just a moment to kind of go back to last week and just kind of give out some highlights before we move forward. Is that okay?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So reviewing, some of the things that came out last week that I thought were, I didn't go back to my notes when I did these highlights. These are to me the kind of, by the Spirit, sometimes that happens. I have about 10 pages of notes. I want to get it all out there, and then it's up to us to figure out where the Spirit wants us to land.
Yeah.
This is where I feel like we were supposed to land. Last week, he defined the enemy to us.
Yes.
Right.
What is an enemy of Yahweh is one who follows their own heart.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's an intense definition.
Yeah.
Because we've been taught that his enemy is a devil halfway up in the air and a principality over Flagstaff. No, it's you following your own heart.
Yep. Yep. That's so good.
I heard something today. I almost got knocked out of my chair. You be the principality. However you want to look at that. What have we believed we have the ability to operate in?
Yep.
And because if he says that you're powerful, you can't claim power in the good things and not claim power in the evil things.
Yep.
And so there's an aspect of that. So an enemy of Yahweh in last week's chapter really was defined by one who will follow their own heart.
Yep.
What came out, I think, over Vox was this revelation. An enemy will forget, or I should say a son who doesn't know who they are, will forget what he did, but remember what you want.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ooh,
that's good.
That is the whole thing that I feel was coming out about the wilderness. Because he's wanting to train his sons and daughters to recognize, I need you to remember what I do and forget what you desire.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what all of this is about. And what we saw with the Egyptians or with Pharaoh is... quickly, and the Israelites, quickly forget what God does for them, but will remember in an instant what they want, like that pot of meat. They forget what God did, but then they remember what they want to remember. Distortion comes in. I mean, the level of mental health that is getting exposed and revealed in this chapter is crazy, because this isn't just like, hey, I would rather have a pot of meat. This is a mental disorder.
Yeah.
You want a pot of meat over the Red Sea?
Yep.
Something is wrong here.
Yeah.
That is an enemy of the Lord, because you are after your own desires instead of remembering what he did. So we need to be a people that will remember what he did and forget what we want. Instead of forgetting what he did and remembering what we want. One of the big things that came out is the wilderness is nothing. Remember how I got all excited? This is all extra. That's what that matches. You guys should be just as excited that the wilderness is just absolutely nothing. But right? Because if we can get this, if we can grab a hold of this, we are going to be a transformed people. And he's going to release the mysteries and the secrets over sons and daughters, because he can trust you to be a king. If he can't trust you because he thinks you're going to be Pharaoh, you ain't getting the promises.
Yeah.
That's why it took 40 years for them to be trained.
Right?
So the wilderness is all about, the definition of wilderness, I think, I can't remember, but it was uncharted, not inhospitable. It just really wasn't beneficial. So we have to, what's happening is we have to remember that what he's leading us into is nothing for you.
Yeah.
So that he can be everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Egypt represents everything for you, and he did not have, he had nothing.
Yeah.
So he's flipping the definition of freedom in your life.
Yeah.
We have always said, I want freedom. Really, what you wanted was more Egypt.
Right. Yeah.
So when he says, let me give you freedom, he takes you into absolute nothing, and you're going to define that as bondage, not recognizing that's his freedom.
Yep. Yeah.
Because he wants you to be a bondservant of him and him alone, not you.
Yeah.
So if we can get this, if we're willing to die in nothing, then to be connected to paganism or whatever, we've already won.
Right.
It means you are not here to seek anything. You're not here for a relationship. You're not here for a status. You're not here for more money. You're not here for what can I get. You're not here for more healing. You're not here for nothing. You're just here because you don't want to be under paganism. It's all extra. We're not celebrating Christmas. Shalom. Where, I mean, where it's all extra. Now, this is what's so crazy. He doesn't stop there. Coming out from under other gods is just the beginning of what he has for us, but to know that that's the beginning should be joyful, not kicking and screaming and why did you take my pot of meat away? He's taking a lot of things away. Why? Because you made them your God. And he wants to be your God. That's the only issue. But then what do we do? Right, Dave? You just said it. We turn around and we blame him. And he's like, I'm not to blame. That's your problem. You shouldn't have replaced me. But because you did, I have to reestablish some things. But because you filter your freedom through your filter, I have to reestablish a new filter. And we don't like that.
That's
good. So that's what all came out last week. Okay? We learned presence. We, remember there was a pattern. We learned presence. We learned to follow. We learned obey. We learned action. We learned to be a partner with him. I have on here freedom. And I think I already talked about this. When you're willing to die in nothing and then have everything in, you're willing to die in nothing than to have everything in slavery. Does that make sense? If you are willing to die in nothing than to have everything in slavery. When I say everything, I'm talking about a house, finances, job, car, whatever that is, food, whatever that issue is, if you are willing to die in nothing, then to claim everything and be in slavery, that is when you really do find true freedom. We're going to go over this more in this chapter, but a lot of what came out last week was the ability to distort the past, to justify your desire. This week, we're going to talk about distorting the past to justify your complaining. But last week, last week was about distorting the past in order to justify your desire. So you want a desire that is over him, and because of that, you'll distort the past in order to justify the desire in order to blame him about what you're in. Does that make sense? So that's a big part of this. Worldly slavery is you are the king. Kingdom slavery is he's king. Either way, you're still in slavery. So you're not leaving slavery to not be in slavery. You're just leaving slavery from yourself to be enslaved by him. And he's better than you. So it's going to be good. But it doesn't feel like that when you got to be king. You're in control. You get to decide. You have your perceptions. You're right in your perceptions, your filter. You are the king of your universe. You get to dictate and mold and perceive, and your reality is truth. So when he smashes your reality and says, actually, that's not truth, and you've got to be subject to something else being God, that is hard to have to deal with, but ultimately he is better, and his filters are better. His what he wants to manifest your world as is better than what you ever could. Like, ever anything that you could possibly have conjured up as awesome, he's got more. But before he can give you the more, he has to trust you that that's, that you're willing to let him be that. So because if I said this, I think, on Vox, if we don't work this out, I think I said wilderness, I meant promised land, but either way, if you are going to be raised to be a king, then ultimately, if you don't get out from under what you were raised in, which is yourself, whatever that means to you, then you're going to go into the promised land and become Pharaoh. He doesn't want pharaohs.
Right.
He wants sons and kings, right? So he's getting out. One of my titles is, he wants us out of Egypt, but he wants Egypt out of you.
Right.
Because he doesn't want you to take Egypt into the promised land.
Right.
And you will, because you were raised in it.
Yeah, right.
Okay? Not only distort the past to justify your desire, you will accuse to justify your desire.
Yep.
Blame and accusation, all, we call it self-preservation, call it what you want. What it is to be able to justify your own desire.
Yep.
You want to still be God on the throne within this little space, and so in order to do that, everybody else has to be pushed down so you can stay up.
Yep.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
That's what was happening in this last week's Torah portion.
Yeah.
Oppressed people need to see. It's very vulgar. We saw dead people all over the floor, all over the seashore.
Yeah.
And from that is just speaking about the level of oppression that they would have to believe that their enemies are dead.
Yeah.
All right. Red Sea, obviously, was last week's Torah portion. It happened at the end when I was preaching, but what the topic was I'm gonna say Red Sea when I say this. But you could call the Red Sea your deliverance, your transformation, or life, right? That can't happen without Pesach, or without his blood, or without death.
Yeah.
That can't, your life can't happen without death.
Yeah, right.
The death or the blood doesn't mean anything without your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The two connecting points was Pesach and the Red Sea. The spring feast, there's all three of them. The point is we stop at Pesach. It's all about his blood. But his blood means nothing if you don't cross over.
Yeah.
But you can't cross over without his blood. See how this works?
Yes. Yeah.
We are, that's why we're Hebraic, because we want both. We don't want just the cross, but we're not going to just say it's name it and claim it faith. You cannot cross over without the blood, but his blood means nothing if you don't cross over.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
All right.
Right.
And then we got the worship template. Last week was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
That's good.
We have to apprehend the crossover portion, for it is who we are as Hebrews.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like, and that's all on top of the fact that there was a ton of instruction in the sense of a blueprint pattern, following action. Remember we talked about crying out, the communication, kind of the pattern of how all of that led up. The actual crossover was about three sentences. Up until that point, it was the journey to get to that. It was the like what Sarah was talking about being cornered, how they operated with Moshe, how Moshe operated with Yahweh. There was all this pattern in there. So a lot of us just want that crossover worship tambourine moment, but we're not willing to do the work, or whatever you want to call that, up to the point of crossing over. So I talked about a few things that can happen when you get backed up. You can be presumptuous. You can be fearful. You can flee. You can jump in too early. There's all these things that you can choose to do. And he says, stand, wait, and see. And what that means is, don't stop what you're doing. What it means is, stop doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
Stop doing you and wait and see what I do.
Yeah.
And he makes a way.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. I didn't have that down, but I remember that was a good one. All right. Now, from this point forward, this is what's so crazy. Not that that was a hard chapter. I think it was a very victorious chapter.
Yeah.
But, like I said, we all want the tambourine worship moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he hasn't even required anything from us yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
This week, he requires. So, if last week was hard to just get to the point of your own crossover, we're going to have a hard time with this week because of the requirements that he begins to give his people, really.
Yeah.
You want to be set apart? He talks about it. You don't want to be sick like the Egyptians?
Yeah.
That doesn't come from a prayer, guys.
Yeah.
I didn't read one thing, Dwayne's stressing out. I didn't think there's nothing in this Torah portion. Well, they cry out. I think Moshe cried out. But I'm just saying, like, let's just think about this.
Yeah.
What have you been taught? You want to be sick?
Yes.
You pray.
Right.
How about?
Yep.
How about, what does it say to do if you don't want a disease? Obey my commandments. Who said something funny?
That was funny.
I said something funny.
That was a reaction to me.
Like, okay,
yeah.
That's it.
Is that funny? We don't need to travel to a human conference. I don't need a pastor to lay their hands on me.
Right.
It's in me. Yeah. We were created to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But that gets hard when your filter is, but the pork, it's so good. I know I can joke about that now, but a year and a half ago, I couldn't joke about that.
Right.
Yeah. We've all had some many crossover moments, but does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this is simple and yet really simple. We've made things so difficult.
Yeah.
Right? You have to say 10 Hail Marys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did that growing up. I mean, there's just these things, you know, in order to be healed. And he's like, do you not want a disease? You can live disease free.
Yeah.
What? It's right there.
Yeah.
All right. So, but there's requirements to get there. There are promises.
Yeah.
There is such good stuff. There are so many good things in this chapter. And there are so many things that are like, oh. That's what you mean by that, okay? So he begins to require from this point forward. He's had requirements, but there's also been a lot of grace. I'm starting to see it lift.
Yep.
The worms, the rotting, the disease. Like, I'm starting to see, like, you don't obey, there's some consequences here, guys.
Yep.
Before, there was a lot of grace. I think there was always a requirement because of our action and him wanting to partner with us. But we really see it in this Torah portion where we see him as Yahweh wanting to have a partner in this Torah portion.
Yeah.
He needs a partner in this Torah portion, and we're going to get into that. So he's always had that, but there starts to become some consequences if you don't partner.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he gets really straightforward.
Yeah.
Like before, it was kind of like you kind of had to pull out the patterns. Now he's like, just do this every morning.
Yeah.
Don't do this on day 7.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, before it was like, what did Abraham mean by that? How do I have a conversation with him? You know what I mean? You had to kind of pull out the patterns.
Yeah.
And now he's like, you're my people, so let's do this.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And also like, ooh, okay. All right. We're good? We're going to move into the Torah portion.
Yeah.
Do you want to add anything from last week?
Nope.
Nothing?
Nope.
All right. I think I'm going to go kind of down line by line, and then I'm just going to release and we're going to see. I thought for sure this was going to be straightforward, and it's not. I mean, it is straightforward, but meaning there's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot to extract. I thought it was straightforward in the sense of like, guys, sweet water, it's obvious, manna, read your word. Amen. Go home.
Manna, read your word.
And then I'm like, ooh, there's a template for complaining. And there's just so much stuff in here.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to go through this. In the very beginning, I just wanted to touch on this. Miriam is introduced. Miriam, as you guys know, is Moshe's older brother.
Oh,
sister. She's not a man. Because it says prophetess. So I'm assuming she's a woman. She was listed during the time that Moshe was born. She was intricate in his send-off. And that, so that's why we know that, and it says that she's Aaron's older sister, but Moshe and Aaron are brothers, so that would mean she's Moshe's older sister. The interesting thing is her being a prophetess, later on in Numbers, she actually aligns with Aaron against Moshe. So, again, not that this has anything to do with it, but I just wanted to kind of talk about Miriam a little bit. She is the first woman to be titled as a prophetess. Yeah, I think that's it about that. Anyways, I didn't want to overlook her. All right, bitter waters. How many of you guys remember me preaching on bitter waters?
Yeah.
Raise your hand if you remember. So it was in the old building. If you guys don't remember, do you remember Laurie? Is she online?
No.
And she'd be like, I'm going to be all up in your bitter puddle. Remember, she would say, she would like come up lots of people after I preach would be like, I'm going to jump in your bitter puddle. But I don't know what happened. I was just as crazy back then when I preached, but I must have said something about waters and you're the tree, and so jump in the water. And so she was like, I'm going to be all up in your bitter puddle. So she, anytime somebody was all bitter and irritated, she would jump in front of them and be like, I'm the tree. So I preached on this. So this is not a new concept. And manna, how many of you guys remember me preaching on manna?
Yeah. Yes.
The white flaky sweet substance.
Yeah.
So we've already released on this. I don't know if it's on podcast. That doesn't mean I'm not going to release tonight. I'm just saying these are things that he was pointing out to us that are really, really big revelations that I just think is so awesome that we get to come back around with our newfound law-abiding heart.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
yeah.
My own right. self was right. all crazy about being the tree in somebody else's bitter puddle, and yet I was lawless.
Yeah,
right. Right, so we're claiming change in water and had no idea the context of being obedient. So he's just so good to be like, let me bring you back around.
Yeah.
Okay. Bitter waters. There's a pattern. Are you guys starting to read the word that way, in the way that I teach, finding patterns? Read the word, look for the pattern so you can kind of follow a blueprint of why. This isn't just a history lesson of some random lake that was bitter and then it turned sweet and it's a nice idea. What is this and what is it for us? So I look for the pattern. So the first thing is they're on a journey. I mean, that right there is already a pattern. You're moving.
Yeah.
You're on a journey.
Yeah.
And they begin to have a need, right? They're thirsty.
Yeah.
This is salvation. And then at this place, there's an exchange. There's healing and provision. With that healing and provision comes a requirement, and then they move into rest. So just overall pattern. You're on a journey. First part of your journey is salvation. You have a need. He meets that need, right?
Yeah.
Through an exchange.
Yep.
He doesn't just meet your need.
Right.
Yeah.
He requires an exchange right off the bat.
Yep.
And then you are led into provision through the exchange.
Yeah.
You guys catching that? They go to the land of Elim, which is a provision, and rest.
Yeah.
All right. That's an awesome pattern to follow.
Yeah.
Just think of this next week. I'm on a journey. I'm going to have a need. He's going to meet it, but it's going to be through an exchange.
Yeah.
If he gives me something, I'm going to have to give something to him. There's an exchange. From there, provision comes, rest.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah,
okay. All right. First of all, they're on an unusual journey. You do the research, the right after the Red Sea, it doesn't make sense where they go. They go to the wilderness of, what was it called, Shur? The wilderness of Shur? Shur, Shur, anyways. They go somewhere that on the map doesn't make sense with where they're going. It's kind of in a weird, it's an unusual journey. What I'm getting from that is that we're going to walk outside the normal way.
Yeah, for sure.
Be comforted, people. It's not a direct path line. So for those of you that are like me, and everything has to make sense, and it needs to be like this, and then he's like, nope. It's going to be like this, and around, and through, and in, and up, and down, and backwards. You're going to be like, okay, thank you. So it's not a direct path line. All right. We aren't going to go where it's the most popular or even makes sense for that matter.
Yep.
All right. 3 days go by and there's no water. How many of you read that and really like partnered with the Israelites?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we did that water fast.
Sure.
How it feels.
You know, it's like, wow, those poor things. I'm going to bring another perspective.
Okay.
Good. Rationally, compared to what it could have been, 3 days, not a big deal. Hear me, but think about this. We don't read in the word that they started killing livestock because they're freaking out, right? That, meaning like they needed provision. So they're not killing off, we're not seeing famine.
Yeah.
We're not a month in with no food and no water.
Yes.
We're not hearing about illness. We're not hearing about dead relatives because they were, you know, dehydrated. We're not reading about any of that. It's been 3 days, no water. Totally understandable. That would be horrible. But the reality is that it, in comparison, it's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's really not that long of a time, but it was long enough for them to forget.
Yeah.
Is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Let me go into this and then I'll kind of release a little bit more. What I mean by that is sometimes when we are experiencing something, we will tend to over-dramatize mm-hmm. the hardship of what we're in.
Yeah.
And it causes us to forget.
Yeah.
But if you take a step back, or another way for me to say this is get a higher perspective.
Yeah.
If the problem you're in is so big, it means that you're too low.
Yeah.
Get higher to see it.
Yeah.
So if you look at it from this perspective, going higher 3 days, knowing that they're going to be 40 years in the wilderness is not that big of a deal for them to immediately forget the Red Sea.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Now, at the same time, on the flip side of it, I want us to understand the importance of 3 days.
Yeah.
Because we know scientifically your body cannot go longer than 3 days without water.
Yeah.
So again, you have to look at this word where we say that science is matching the word versus the other way around. It's interesting to me that he showed up at 3 days. So all of that, when you're on a journey, you cannot go longer than 3 days without drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So let me do it this way. I'm trying to bring two perspectives because we're going to get into complaining and what the different, what things can happen with complaining. And one of them is over dramatizing your, situation in order to justify your desire of what you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's that aspect. At the same time, if you cannot go without complaining 3 days without water, why can we go 3 days without connection?
Mm-hmm.
Why can we go 3 days without the word? Why can we go 3 days without, he says, I am the living water. I am thirst. So if your body can't go past 3 days, why do you let your soul and your spirit? So we've got these strong bodies, and if we could see in the spirit, some of our souls are absolutely dehydrated and dying, and our spirits are just...
Yeah.
I mean, or another way to look at it is the angels that are assigned to you are just... They're next to you, and they're not.
Yeah.
Your body might be alive, but everything that's attached to you is just dying because it's gone longer than 3 days.
Yeah.
So there's something about 3 days that if it says that I am, you know, he says I'm the bread of life, and he says that that you will not thirst anymore. That means drink of him. Don't let yourself go 3 days without drinking from him, because this is what comes of being dehydrated.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So in the spirit, I'm trying to get at freedom. In the spirit, hunger or thirst after his water more than being focused on your physical being not having water, complaining and saying, well, you know, we're just going to die.
Yeah.
Like, meaning you're willing to die on a hill because you didn't get water for 3 days, but you're not willing to die on a hill of drinking of him in 3 days.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. All right, 3 days without him. Now I'm going to get really practical. If you go 3 days without connecting with him, you start to complain. I mean, that's the pattern. 3 days without living water is going to cause you to forget and cause you to complain. Does that make sense why I'm bringing both perspectives?
Yes. Yeah.
The reality is on Earth, 3 days was not that big of a deal for them to be freaking out the way that they did.
Yeah.
The accusations, the forgetting, all of that stuff. At the same time, in the spirit, can we be that tenacious?
Yeah.
That we would be so thirsty that we would not decide to go beyond 3 days. Because, and if you do, complain, you will forget, and then you start complaining.
Yeah.
Okay?
Good.
All right. Now I have in here, this is what I wrote down, complain, question mark. They just had an experience.
Yep.
This is not knowledge, you guys. Like, this was not knowledge.
Yeah.
They were not being taught by Moshe.
Yeah.
They were not just getting a word about the Red Sea.
Yeah.
You have to be so thirsty to understand this.
Yeah.
Right now, we are not crossing a Red Sea.
Right.
I'm just giving you a word.
Right.
Yeah.
They experienced the Red Sea.
Yeah.
It was not knowledge. It was experience.
Right.
And they still...
Yeah.
They experienced the greatest miracle. And they're complaining.
Yep. Yep. So us.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Trying to think about how I want to go about doing this. All right. There was a little side note that I wanted to bring about this that I felt like I had to wrestle through, but I want to release that his water is perfect. We're gonna get into the bitter waters. I'm like, that's in my notes, right? We're gonna get into the bitter waters. But before we get into that, I want to talk about how his water is perfect. It has a little bit to do with the manna, but one of the revelations that was coming to me is that it's not about the amount. Because one drop in concentrate is the same as 1 gallon diluted. Right?
Yeah.
One drop concentrate is the same as 1 gallon diluted. So it's not about the amount. Here's why. You have to pay attention to what you're drinking. Because think about the Egyptians. Egyptians, they were overtaken by water.
Right, yeah.
And here the Israelites are thirsty. Mm. What do you think he was doing in their training? He was training them to thirst after things of the kingdom. Another way to look at it is anything that is in abundance that's not him is going to wipe you out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look at water two different ways. You can look at water as the thing that's going to overtake you or the thing that sustains you. Is that making sense? Like, so the Egyptians had so much water. The Israelites have none. How many of us have been in that situation where you leave a situation where you feel like that situation is evil, and then you're walking with Yahweh, and what you left is like just
thriving.
Abundantly thriving.
Yes.
So much water. And I'm over here thirsty. How many of us would be like, Yahweh, you don't make no sense? Right?
Right.
But I mean, because you're walking and you're just like, I am. And then you dramatize. Oh, yes! Dry! You forget the community you're in. Forget that you've got Moshe. Forget that you just crossed over. Forget that you didn't die in all the abundance of water. You know what I mean? Like, why did they have the revelation of like, well, that water is abundant water kills. I'm good being thirsty for a while.
Yeah.
No! They leave the situation. They're like, where's my water?
Yep.
The very thing that just took out their enemies, they're hungry for.
Yep.
Guys, does this make sense?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So I want us to wrestle that. So Egyptians had a ton of water, and what I was getting from that is that your own desires and excess will override you and kill you.
Yeah, that's good.
Too much money, too much food, too much pride, too much anger, you out.
Yep.
He'll cause you to be thirsty.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, maybe you're going through a situation, you got no money, you're in debt. He's like, be thirsty.
Yeah, yeah.
You had too much of something. I need you to get your filter right before I can add.
That's good.
Okay?
That's good.
Pride, you had too much of that. You're going to get real humble.
Yeah, yeah.
For about 3 days. I won't let you go longer than 3 days. Don't over-dramatize the issue. Right? I'm not going to kill you. I'm just going to get you thirsty.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah.
And we think he's this big bad wolf.
Yep.
Right? Yep. The Israelites had none. Yahweh was building up their thirst for him. This is our training. That's what I mean. If you're willing to die in nothing, you'll be fine with being thirsty.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Again, wilderness is not your definition of freedom. Just have to keep reminding ourselves that. Because, right, we were after freedom. That's why we left Egypt. But wilderness is not the definition of your freedom. All right, in the midst of the unusual path, they cry out to him. As soon as they cry out to him, he shows them things. Meaning, this isn't like he's going to give you a revelation. They see a tree. Okay? They show him a tree. Now, what I have here is, to our earthly eyes, what a mundane thing to see. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're thirsty. They're crying out to Yahweh, and he shows them a tree. How many of you have called me, and you've been thirsty, and you're like, give me something, and you get a stick? You're going to be pissed. You'd be like, that is not what I called you for. I'm like, it's the tree of life. You're gonna have to do something with it. He showed us a stick. I mean, he got a stick.
Yeah.
See beyond.
Yeah.
That tree was the tree of life.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't let our earthly eyes think of something when he gives you provision and it doesn't look the way you want it to look. Yeah. See beyond, because there is something about that tree which we're gonna get into. If you remember what I preached, you know what the tree is. How many know who the tree is? How many remember what that tree is, or not who? Anybody remember what the tree is? No? I should be more powerful than that. My sermon should have lasting effects.
Well, I wasn't there, so.
True. Jess is relieved. All right. Now, here's what's awesome. Once again, they followed instructions and they took action. Right? They grabbed a hold of that tree. Now, here's what's crazy. They didn't use the same method. Why would they not just use his staff? He had a staff. He just split the sea. I'd be like, Moshe, split the water, do something, make it whipped cream. Do something with this. But they don't use a staff.
Yeah.
So be careful falling into patterns. If you provided one way, don't look for the same thing, because he's going to give you something random. You're going to be like, but I wanted a staff. He's like, no, take the tree. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Don't turn to past ways. He's going to show you something new. We've all heard that before. But even in the new, you still want an old thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. This tree. I can't believe you guys don't remember this. This tree, Exodus 15:25. It's H6086. It means tree, wood, timber, gallows, stake, stick. 1 Peter 2:24. I didn't write it down to read it. Write down the scripture. Peter talks about the cross, the tree that Yeshua was nailed to. Same word. Oh, yeah. That tree is the cross. Okay? Not literally, but it's the same word. What they saw was him and the cross and the exchange that can happen in that tree. Okay? Revelations 22:2 and 14 talks about the tree of life. Same word. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a little hard to do studies like this because there is no resource that does equal translations between Greek and Hebrew and vice versa. So you've got to dig a little bit, but being able to use other resources who have done that, the scripture in 1 Peter 2:24 and Revelations 22:2, that Greek word is the equivalent to the Hebrew word that they saw in the wilderness, the tree.
What was the scripture in Revelation?
Revelation 22:2 and verse 14. I didn't write them down to read them. I do know that Revelation 21 talks about there will be no pain, there will be no sorrow. Right afterwards, it talks about the cross. This is that same word that they are experiencing in this moment when they see the tree. Now you understand the exchange that's happening.
Yeah.
When the bitter waters turn sweet, it's
yeah.
through him on the cross.
Yeah.
Not a yeah. stick, but who he is.
Yeah.
Okay? They received an exchange, bitter to sweet. It became consumable.
Yeah.
The water that you are standing at without him is bitter. With him, it's consumable. They knew that they couldn't drink the bitter. Now, this is interesting. The Israelites were at least smart enough to know that water, they couldn't drink it. How many of us get to the bitter water and decide, I am drinking that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
true.
That's true.
Jewish mysticism does talk about how this water, how it became sweet. It had a lot to do with the tree and the minerals and the way that the minerals extracted. All I want to say about that is that this water had the minerals that caused them to be cleaned out, as well as the minerals to give them endurance moving forward. My point in that is that what he enters into not only will transform bitter waters into something that's consumable and something that's sweet, but that sweet water is not just for your enjoyment. Mm-hmm. That sweet water is for you to be cleaned out and to endure moving forward.
Yeah.
There's sustenance in that water for where they were going.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like their electrolytes?
It was their electrolytes. It had magnesium, so they were all getting cleansed. Now, and the reason why they say that is because there was a lot, it talks about the disease of the Egyptians. There was a lot of disease that they could have carried in that. So this water wasn't just to alleviate their thirst. It was to heal them. It was to
yeah.
bring healing water. So again, this water has been transformed by him because it was going to produce healing in them.
Yeah.
Okay. At the same time, they also get a new name. They get the name Adonai who heals you. So they have
yep.
now been introduced to Adonai the healer.
Yep.
How amazing is that? So up until
yeah.
this point, they just get to complain and forget, and then they get bitter waters into sweetness, and everything's awesome. Immediately, the scripture says immediately, there he made a statute and an ordinance for them. So as soon as this exchange happens,
mm-hmm.
he decides to immediately say, with this promise. Now think about what I just said. The promise has to do with the cross.
Yeah.
How have we missed it then post-Yeshua that there would not be
yes.
a requirement
yeah. Yeah.
to say if you don't access
right.
the sweet water,
right.
you're going to get a disease.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And he didn't say to stare at the tree.
Right, yeah. Right.
He didn't
yeah.
say look at the tree and claim it.
Right. Yeah.
He said take the tree and apply it.
Yeah. yeah.
Now
yeah.
with that application, I'm going to cause you to have a statute and a regulation moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ouch. Because we stop at the dance of healing.
Yeah.
I don't mean dance. I just mean like we stop at healing and we're good with healing.
Yeah.
Before provision, there's a statute.
Yep.
He's good. He's going to heal you. But he's going to give some instructions if you want to move into provision.
Yeah.
Okay? Anytime you see the word statute or ordinance, another way to look at that is attesting. I know that's kind of controversial, but bear with me. Anybody who's a parent in here is going to understand what I'm about to say. A command is a test.
Mm. Yeah.
Not like, just like we wouldn't as parents be like, let me see what they're going to do.
Mm.
Like he's off to the side watching.
Right.
But with a requirement always is a testing.
Yeah.
Because it's up to you to obey or not.
Yeah.
Right.
So therefore,
yeah.
it's a test.
Right.
In school, you take a test, fail or not. If
yeah.
it's not a bad, your teacher's not bad.
Yeah.
If they give you a test.
Right.
It's to show where you're at
yeah.
in the information.
Yeah.
And if you fail, it's to show where you need to grow.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
if
yeah.
you succeed, you know where you're going well.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
a bad,
right.
the test should not be a bad thing.
Right.
A test is a good thing.
Yeah.
But a command is a test because obedience determines if we pass or not. Yeah. The literal scripture says, if you obey, that means you have a choice.
Yep.
He's not saying you will obey me or else. Yep. He just says, if you obey. And he attaches a promise to it.
Yeah.
Let me find the actual scripture. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. That's where I got that, was in the scripture. He said, if you diligently listen to the voice of Adonai your God, do what is right in his eyes, pay attention to his laws, and keep all of his decrees, I will put none of the diseases on you, which I have put on the Egyptians, for I am Adonai who heals you. So if you do this, then this.
Yeah.
Cause and effect. If you do this, then this. He attaches a promise. Now, this is what's so amazing. The promise is no disease. But he gave you how to operate in not getting a disease by turning the water for you. So he's not saying you're on your own and just listen to my laws and you won't have a disease. He gives you the provision on how to not get sick.
Well
as the test or the statute that says, now follow my instructions. What he was basically saying is follow what I'm going to give you. Okay? So, we're learning now that promise is not tied to how long you speak in tongues every day.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or how good of a prayer warrior you are.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The promises are tied to obedience.
Yeah.
Which I know is kind of like a word that's just... can be, what do you mean I have to obey, right? But think about it as a parent. Oh, where did I have this on here? I had this on here somewhere. I don't know where I have it. But think about it as a parent. If I give instructions, obedience is going to be tied to maturity. As they obey, more freedom, more maturity, more responsibility. That's just how it is. You don't obey, there's consequences. Maybe I get into this with the manna, because there is extreme consequences for their disobedience. And it's not like it's crazy, it's just there's consequences.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of time people think that I can do whatever and ask for forgiveness and there's no problem. Forgiveness is free. Forgiveness comes immediately. But there could be natural consequences. I've said this over and over again, I'll say it forever. But with training kids, if Sean got into a car accident, he can come home and say and ask for forgiveness. Forgiveness is freely given. His heart is saying, I want to turn from, let's say he wasn't paying attention or he was on his phone and something happened. He's turning from his ways. That forgiveness happens immediately. That does not mean that what he's saying, will you forgive me for, is that he doesn't have to take care of the car.
Right, right.
I forgive you, take care of the car.
Yeah,
you got to clean up that mess. You got to, whatever, that, you know what I mean? Forgiveness has nothing to do with consequences. You can have consequences, and it doesn't mean you're not forgiven.
Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of people blame Yahweh. Oh, you made me sick. No, it's a consequence for McDonald's.
Yeah.
It's not, he didn't do that. He didn't fulfill his promise. It's not that. It's him being able to. There's natural consequences to, and I'm not saying he has an instruction on McDonald's. That's just something I threw out there. That's a consequence for me. I have a major consequence if I go to McDonald's. I've got a major MSG addiction. It was a major problem. I had like the shakes. I've never done cocaine, but like cocaine, like shakes, like from not having fast food. It was bad. It was a drug. It was really, really bad. So there's a consequence for me. I cannot do that. There will be a consequence for me if I do that. If I do that and I disobey the instruction he gave me, I can't blame and turn to him and say, well, why do I have high cholesterol? He's going to be like, I forgive you, but you got to take care of that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this test is awesome. These statutes are awesome because he's training us into maturity.
Yeah.
This is a good thing. Okay? All right. The place, now this is going to be good. Think about this. We're going into Elim right now. We're going to go into rest and we're going to go into provision. prior to rest and provision, I want us to be reminded that it was the place of bitterness and testing where the miracles came.
Yeah.
Because in provision, there was no new revelation. His name was given, the exchange was given, the sweet water was given. Right? Does that make sense? The miracle happens in the testing.
Yeah.
In the exchange from bitterness to sweetness, obtaining the cross, obtaining his ordinances, that is where the miracles happen.
Yep.
In the thirst, in the need, in the exchange, and in obedience is where the miracle happens.
Yeah.
Once you receive the miracle, you enter into provision and rest. That means what I'm saying is when you're in rest, it's not a new revelation.
Yeah.
It's establishing the revelation that's already been given.
Yeah.
We have to understand these cycles and understand what our week even looks like and all that stuff. There's so much in this. But what I basically am getting at is in the place of bitterness, in the place of testing, in the place of instructions, in the place of obedience is where the miracle comes. It's where another name is revealed. Not in the bliss of the palms and the water and the provision. That's just the added benefit to living his lifestyle. But it's not in that a new revelation comes. That make sense?
Yep.
Rest and provision is an establishment of what he produces in your testing.
Yes.
Don't despise the testing is what I'm getting at. That's where your miracle is.
Yep.
Your miracle is. Got it?
Yeah.
So rest comes to establish what has been received. And then it increases it, but it's not new. So an increase in provision, but not necessarily new provision. They got sweet water, they got more water. They didn't get water and then get something new. Does that make sense?
Yep.
All right. Aleem, the actual word means rest and comfort. They rested here before heading to receive more regulation. Do you guys hear Shabbat?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't introduce Shabbat till manna, but you're seeing it here. They're in the place of provision. Rest is happening before they move forward into more testing, more regulations, more obedience. So you start to see his cycles and his patterns through this. Okay? I'm not going to get into it, but there's hidden things with 12 and 70. There's 12 tribes. They say that there was enough water to sustain 12 tribes because of the 12 wells. There's 12 apostles. There's 70 elders. There's 70 disciples. There's a lot. There's 12 and 70 in Revelations. Daniel talks about 12 and 70. 70 is an aspect of perfect numbers because of seven is complete and 12 represents it. Or I'm sorry, 7 is complete and 10 represents his law. So just some things to think about when you're reading through the scripture and you see numbers. Why is Moshe telling us that there's 12 wells, 70 palms?
Yeah.
Well, there's something about that that you can, you know, lean into about the disciples and the apostles and the wells, the pure water from the wells of the apostles and those being sent out. So anyways, there's a lot of that. Okay? All right. Moving on to manna. We doing all right?
Yeah.
Good, Mom.
Yeah. I don't know. There's so much with manna. Okay. All right. We read right before the manna story that they have been, did you guys catch? 1 month. They've been at this 1 month. 15th of the next month means that they've been at this for 1 month. Because remember they left on the 14th of Nisan. Did you guys catch up? So you can kind of just see a timeline of what's been, you know, what's going on in the context of 40 years. We've been in this 1 month. So this is where I feel like we're supposed to go with this Torah portion. But complaining is the topic.
Okay.
I found three indicators that you might be complaining. So we're going to kind of do this backwards. We're going to write down these three indicators. If these indicators are something that you're dealing with, it could be because it's rooted in complaining.
Okay.
Yay. So we've already talked about this, but these people were just singing.
Yes.
They were just singing. They had experienced another, they just sang and then experienced another miracle.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? You are thirsty and you come up to this water and how disappointing. They're bitter.
Yeah.
And then they're sweet, and then they can drink, and now they're in this place of provision. And they're complaining. It's craziness. So number one, this is where I got it. I've already kind of talked about this, but we're gonna talk about it from this perspective. There is a level of anticipated, I'm gonna read this and then I'll go back. Anticipated outcome from fear or worry versus actual experience.
Can you say that again?
So the first indicator that you might be complaining is that you are anticipating an outcome that comes from fear or worry versus actual experience. I talked about this with the thirst, but what I'm getting at is that their starvation, because now in this Torah portion, now in this part of the Torah portion, they're saying that they're starving. So it's been 3 days, they're thirsty, and now they're just starving. But like I said, we're not reading that people are dying.
Right.
We're not reading about a famine. They're not killing each other and eating each other. They're not killing their cattle. I mean, they had livestock, guys.
Yeah.
And they're starving. Can you imagine? You guys, this happens in my house. You guys know where I'm going with this? They open up the fridge.
There's nothing
to eat. They have all the cattle they could possibly want, and they're just starving. Think about it. I think part of it was they were anticipating the starvation. It wasn't actual yet. So this is what I was talking about with the water. I think I kind of jumped ahead, but hey, it fit. Don't dramatize the situation when that's not really what's going on.
Yeah.
That causes you to look at the fridge and be like, there's just nothing.
Yeah.
Because that's what's happening. It wasn't quite real in comparison to what it could have been.
Yeah.
And so to me, their starvation was more anticipated starvation versus experience.
Yep.
Okay? They didn't have weeks of famine. They weren't killing anyone, all that kind of stuff. They weren't losing family members to starvation. We don't read any of that. So be mindful that complaining is more about what you think is going to happen versus what is happening.
Yeah.
This is the epitome of anxiety.
Oh, my God.
But here's the cool thing. It's rooted in complaining.
Yes.
I'm like getting freedom as I talk. That's my problem. If I'd stop complaining about the laundry, I wouldn't have anxiety.
Yes. Yes.
Because the reality is I'm not really afraid of the what's at hand. It's what's going to happen if I don't get a hold of it now. If I don't do this right now, it's going to pile up and tomorrow's going to suck.
Yeah.
It hasn't even happened yet and I'm freaking out.
Right.
Nothing has happened yet. My kids want to drive. It's a little dark out. And I'm like, like knuckles. What is that from? And nothing has even happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is anticipated from fear and worry.
Yeah.
But if it's rooted in complaining, then what I need to do and what we're going to learn is the antidote to complaining would be gratitude.
Yeah.
Man, I'm thankful my kids are safe. Man, I'm thankful that they have angels that have been assigned to them. I am thankful for their cars, that they are going to function properly. Can you imagine you shift into gratitude?
Yeah.
You're not going to be white-knuckling their drives.
Yeah.
You're going to be sending them off into kingdoms. So you shift anxiety into gratitude. But does that make it sense?
Yeah.
It's an anticipated outcome versus the actual experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
good. Okay?
That's good.
Yeah.
All right, number two, if you're dealing with selective remembrance. I feel like, what is that guy? You might be a redneck if. you might be a complainer if. If you deal with selective remembrance, you might be a complainer. If you deal with anticipated starvation, you might be a complainer. think about that too.
Yeah.
Oh my God, my kids are going to starve if I don't make dinner. No, they're not. We'll be fine. Right? That has to all be anticipated worry.
Yeah.
They're not even starving yet. And I'm like, but they're going to starve if I don't make them their food. I don't know why I out myself.
You think they're going to starve if I make them.
This is true. So
that may be rooted in something else.
Now you guys understand when I'm set
and he's home, and I'm like, you guys need a burger. My kids are going to die. See, it's all it's anticipated. Well, anyways. Okay, number two, selective remembrance. If you distort the past to support your complaint, you might be a complainer. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you have a complaint, and then you distort the past in order to justify your complaint.
Yep.
Okay?
Okay.
So not only was it not real, all of a sudden slavery somehow became better.
Yeah.
So they're not really starved yet, and somehow slavery was better because they had a pot of meat.
Yep.
So you distort the past to justify your complaint.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, selective remembrance is you distorting the past in order to justify the complaint can be rooted in complaint. A pot of meat, a belly full, in exchange for death? Yeah. I mean, that's where we're at here.
Yep.
They literally said it. We would have rather have died full. That's what I'm getting at. Can we be a people that will die hungry than to die full in death?
Yep.
I'd rather die in life. That sounds so weird, but you guys understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
I'd rather die in life hungry after him in freedom than to die full in slavery. But somehow they distorted the past that pot of meat was better.
Yep.
Selective remembrance in order to justify their complaint because they're hungry and they want food and they want it now.
That's good. Yeah.
Okay? When we want things right now, we become demanding, and we want our own way, you will distort the past.
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
that was good enough. And then I wrote my notes in here, are we that far off, though, to judge them?
No.
Nope.
All right, number three. The third indicator that you might be a complainer is you accuse.
Yeah.
Because then the next thing they do is they accuse Moshe. And they accuse him of really horrible, bad, and evil intentions.
Yes.
It's not even like they accuse his ways. They accuse him of his character.
Yep.
And this happened in the last Torah portion, but they basically accuse him of bringing him all you brought us all out here to kill us. So now he's a murderer?
Yeah.
Right? Like, so accusation, in order to justify your complaint, will make the most evil of accusations in order to justify yourself.
Yep.
Like, you won't just accuse. You will accuse. What would be a word?
Malicious.
Malicious accusation in order to justify your intentions.
Yep.
It's easy to accuse. And, if you are a complainer, it is easy to accuse and will make up the worst motives.
Yeah.
And then as we learn, Moshe said, you're not really accusing someone anyways, you're accusing Yahweh.
Yep.
Because who is it that is bringing the starvation?
Right. Yep.
Wasn't that a good extraction from the Torah portion about complaining?
Yes.
I mean, it's just good because it's daily life. So you can look at those three things. Anxiety or anticipated outcome, selective remembrance, distorting the past, and then operating an accusation can be, and I don't know if I'm saying this right, but all of those things are indicators that you are complaining.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the antidote to not have those indicators is to not be a complainer, unless you guys have a better word. The antidote that I have for complaining, the opposite of complaining, would be gratitude.
Yes.
Being filled with gratitude will reverse those indicators in your life.
Yeah.
Do you know there's science for that one?
I'm sure there is. Yeah. But this is just anybody who struggles with distorting the past or blame or anxiety, you can be free tonight. Not even have to lay hands on you. Or myself. Okay, so after all of that, he decides to provide. You guys, thank the Lord I am not Yahweh. I would have slit their throats. I don't even, like, you guys are absolutely ridiculous. That is insane. I just crossed you over from the sea. I just changed the water. And you still aren't getting it? I don't understand. He's just so good. He says he's going to rain bread. Rain bread. All right, let's talk about that for a little bit. I was telling Dwayne earlier, I envision him like, he's like in heaven. Why did he say rain bread? I think him and all the angels were like, 4 years. Okay, first of all, rain bread, it's unexpected and it's unrecognizable. So you cry out, you want that pot of meat. He doesn't give you a pot of meat. He gives you provision through unexpected and unrecognizable ways. Provision from, you will gain provision from something we've never known even existed or was possible.
Yeah.
So they're crying out for slavery, death, and a pot of meat, and he wants to give them provision that they've never, you've never seen this before.
Yep.
Okay. It's so, I'm going to talk about the name of this provision because it's so easy to call it manna. And it is, that's the title of this, but we're going to get into that. The actual name is listed in Psalms and it's called angel's food.
That's good.
It also is called bread from heaven, and that is in the scripture. But in Psalms, it's called angel's food. So manna comes from the Israelites saying, what is that? They literally said, what is it? And so they named that manna. The Hebrew word means, what is it? So it just means that, but the point is how amazing is that is we don't even know the things that he provides.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yep.
And that is your sustenance for the next 40 years.
Yeah.
Okay. So be okay if your provision, if you're like, what is that? I don't know how many times. I have no idea. Man, there are so many times he's given me provision. I'm like, I don't understand what that is. What is that? And especially when you're married to this guy. He starts showing me a system that's digital, and I'm like, what is that? What is that? And he's like, show me, it's provision. It's in the phone. Where's the money? Right? I'm like, where's the bank account? Where's the cash? He's like, it's a number. It's right here. I'm like, what does that do for me? It's in your phone. He's like, but you can exchange it. I'm like, well, I don't understand. But it doubles. What? You're going to say, there's going to be some things that are going to come in your life. You're like, what is that?
Manna.
It's a little small round substance. Fine. And it's, anyways, and this is not easy to gather for the Israelites. It's very fine. It's small. It's round. There's other scriptures in the word that describe it. Later on in Exodus, we're going to read how it's like coriander seed. Psalms, I think, talks about it, gives it a little bit more of a definition. So what I have right now is it's small, round substance, fine. It's not easy to gather. It's like coriander seed, sweet, pearl-like color. They baked and boiled it. They ground it on millstone, cooked it. This talks about it in Numbers. So there's more descriptions that are coming for this. My point is in the beginning, you're going to be like, what is that?
Yeah.
And then later on, some more descriptions come to explain what all this is.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, I've already preached on this. You guys have talked about this. I remember I came so alive when I read this scripture because to me, pearl-like, flaky substance that's sweet. And we know that he says, I am the bread of life.
Yeah.
It is who he is.
Yeah.
And he says that if he's the bread of life, then the word, he is the word made flesh. So
yes.
The word is your bread of life. Does this not look a lot like manna?
Yeah.
So let this be your manna and your sustenance when you're reading through the ordinance of what you need to do with this. Because when it says you're going to gather it every morning or it'll melt away, look at this. Because the sun is going to melt it. Get up early. Get in your word.
Yeah.
I'm that literal. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when we read this, it's not like, well, those ordinances are for them. Because we don't have manna. It's so easy to justify and be like, I don't have to listen to that because we don't have to collect manna. That's not what we do.
Yeah.
It's not for today. But if you read into it, if he's the bread of life and he's sending it from heaven and he is the word made flesh, then why would this not be our... What is that?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
He promised the bread, which is the word, Yeshua. Okay, now this is where this Torah portion gets really beautiful. Because we see the most glorious, in my opinion, let me say this. Last Torah portion, we saw action to his word, right? We saw Moshe had to lift the staff.
Yeah.
Right? So he had to, what I was saying was Yahweh didn't, his staff didn't provide the sea.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do that in and of himself, but Yahweh didn't do it without him.
Yeah.
Right? So there's this partnership. Last Torah portion was Moshe in action.
Mm-hmm.
This Torah portion is the people in action.
Yeah.
It's everyone. It moves from Moshe to everyone in this Torah portion. So this is the kind of the kicker. He promises the bread. He does not promise to put it in your mouth.
Yep. Yeah. That's good.
You, it's the same thing with Pesach and the Red Sea. It's the same with the staff and it's the same thing. There's this crazy co-partnering going on. You cannot collect manna without the miracle. There's no manna to collect without Yahweh.
Right.
We got that clear.
Yeah.
His sovereignty, his goodness doesn't need you. You're not that awesome.
Yep.
The manna came from him.
Yep. Yeah.
But if you want it,
yeah,
you have to go get it.
Yep.
Because he does not rain it down and then like cut it up and then put it in your mouth for you.
Yep. Right.
It's a partnership of what this looks like. Again, same thing. Eating the manna without Yahweh wouldn't make sense because you wouldn't have manna. But manna not collected would mean nothing.
Yeah.
Wasted word all over the ground. Provision just looked at, mocked at, sitting there, and it melts away.
Yep.
Opportunity goes away.
Yeah.
Opportunity goes away.
Yep.
Opportunity goes away.
Yep.
It would mean nothing if he continually laid out the manna and you didn't take it. At the same time, you can't take what isn't given to you.
Yep.
This is the picture of our partnership with him.
Yeah.
Okay?
Good.
He does not promise. You have to go and gather. Again, this is another test. There's a blessing, and there's a responsibility with that obedience.
Yeah.
So there's a blessing, but there's responsibility with this blessing.
Yep.
Okay? Now, this I thought was interesting. It said in the Word, and when they see the manna, they will know that I brought them out. They didn't know already? But this is, he's so good, right? How do they not know already? And he's like, and when they get this food, they're going to know that I am Adonai. His heart is just this constant, that they would know who I am. Whereas I would be like, leave them. They don't get it by now. Like, what? How do they not know that they were brought out from the Egyptians?
Yeah.
But he's better. His ways are higher.
Right?
Now here's something that's gonna go along with that. It's probably gonna like clearly experiences do not change the heart like we think that they should.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going on here. Up until this point, they have had a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Experiences are not changing the heart.
Yeah.
Because they keep forgetting.
Yep.
We crave experience. Experience is a moment.
Yep.
Clearly. Because the Red Sea was an experience and it didn't matter because they still didn't know that they were brought up from the Egyptians. I'm not saying to not yearn after experiences. We want the miracles. But there's something deeper he's getting at because clearly experiences weren't cutting it.
That's good.
Right?
Right.
This is that pot of meat I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I want the pot of meat.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay. I just wrote down Passover, plagues, Red Sea, sweet water. Wow. Let's not be those people who only remember him in their need.
Yep. Yep.
Which this is going to kind of get us off topic, but this is the bedrock of what we've talked about with the system of religion.
Yeah.
You see a people that only want him in need.
Yep.
And then forget when he meets the needs because they don't go beyond the need. What does that sound like?
Yep.
The very system we were called to get out of. So we can't be those people that only cry out in need.
Yeah.
We've
got
to go beyond or else we're right back to the system he said for us to leave.
Yep.
Right.
That make sense?
Yep.
All right. They apparently needed a consistent 40-year promise to remind them. Do we have to wait that long? So I have written down here, experiences come and go, and they become memories.
Yes.
But his food is daily, and that's the reminder that they needed.
Yeah.
Because from this point forward, it's not an experience, and I'm not saying that there isn't going to be experiences, but I'm just saying from this point forward, the food is sustained.
Yeah.
That's an everyday thing.
Yeah.
So where the Red Sea was once, then stopped.
Right.
Right? The bitter waters, sweet, stopped. Becomes memories we forget.
Right.
Daily food, every day.
Yeah.
That means that the word has got to be
more
important than your awesome experiences.
Yeah.
Because in this Torah portion, he's basically saying that is what is going to sustain you, not all the experiences, because clearly all of the experiences have happened. You keep forgetting. So this is going to be daily.
Yep. That's good. Yeah.
Okay? All right. I don't need to get into that. Okay. Yes, I'm going to skip. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm going to skip forward. He does more than meet the material needs. He will meet the material needs. They were hungry.
Yeah.
He gave them quail and he gave them bread. So he's going to meet the material needs, but he's also teaching eternal lessons.
Yeah.
This is all about eternal lessons right here.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I'm going to read about our dependence on God in Deuteronomy 8:3. So he humbled you, allowed you to be hungry, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very much an eternal
thing,
not just a story.
Yeah.
This is where we get to see that beautiful partnership. We are each doing our part. He wants to cooperate with his people.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to cooperate with man. And I've talked about this. We can't produce the manna in and of ourselves, and God will not gather it in and of himself.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
That was good,
Mom. All right. Now, all of this provision has come.
Right.
So guess what? What comes after provision?
Requirements.
Instructions, requirements, statutes, commandments. So we're just going to go through this really quick. Going back, remember the sweet water. There was a promise. Okay, so here we go. Here are some of the statutes that come with reading. I'm just going to call it reading the word. It is based on individual. Does it remind you of Pesach? It is based on individual and family basis. This is not a distribution center. I believe where we have failed in church is we have become a manna distributor.
Yeah.
And he did not say that there was going to be some major distribution center that you can just come and it's been collected for you.
Yeah.
You need to collect the word, and that's where we've missed out.
Yeah.
Because we have not fed ourselves. We have not... And I don't mean being on your own. You guys know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
But we're not gathering the food.
Yeah.
Okay? Pesach was also not a one-time teaching, because he keeps talking about how each household needs to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So Pesach is carrying on. You couldn't hire or make someone else do it for you. A certain amount was perfect. Going back to the one drop of concentration is equal to 1 gallon diluted. He did not allow hoarding or poverty. So in the collecting, he did not allow poverty mindset, and he did not allow hoarding.
That's good.
There was perfect balance in the collecting. There also was a window of time. He was teaching his people intentionality and work ethic.
That's good.
Same with Pesach, right? There's a window of time. It was gone in the morning. Like, it was gone the next day, right? So there's this, he's teaching his people discipline. He's teaching work ethic. Even down to when the sun comes up, it melts away. There was a diligence that he was teaching his people. I keep going back to work ethic, intentionality, not operating in hoarding, not operating in poverty. These are all concepts that are coming with these statutes. Now there were extreme, I thought they were extreme, and immediate consequences for not obeying. Mm-hmm. Immediately, there was worms. It's not like you give them a grace period and said, well, just try this out. And then after like a couple of weeks, if you don't get it, then you might get some worms. It was like the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, because he wanted them to just, I'm going to say it, and you're going to follow. And if you don't, there's consequences.
Yeah.
And then it makes me wonder, like, well, where did the disease come? Probably from the worms and the stink.
Yeah.
Anyways. Now, here's the cool thing. He's not going to make you obey. He does not force you have to do this.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that he's not a good God if there's penalties for not listening.
Yes.
Okay? He doesn't make you obey, but there are penalties if you don't. It's like I'm not going to, if my kids don't obey, I'm not going to shoot them. But there are consequences for not obeying.
Yeah.
That does not mean, and hopefully you can talk to any one of my kids, if there are consequences, they would never think that because there's a consequence, we don't love.
Yeah.
That they understand the difference between consequence, that consequence is love.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is huge for us to understand because we get so frustrated with the consequence thinking that that is what's tied to love. If love is tied to consequences or not, we have a wrong, our society is just way off whack.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, because he loves those that he corrects, so it doesn't make any sense to tie correction with not loving.
Yeah.
All right. This is what it looks like to be taught and raised. Because without consequences, you can't be raised.
Yeah.
Would children, think about this, if you're a parent, would children decide to do the right thing within guidelines if there was no consequences?
No.
Definitely not.
No, we are born ridiculous.
Yep.
You do not have, let me say this, you don't have to teach kids to share. I mean, sorry, you do have to teach kids to share. You don't have to teach kids to hoard.
Right.
You don't have to teach kids competition.
Yep.
You don't have to teach kids to fight. You don't have to teach them these things. That just happens naturally, right? You don't have to teach kids to have an attitude. You don't have to teach kids to throw a fit. I never once had to train my kids to fall on the ground and throw in a fit. Never once. I never once had to instill in them, no, if you don't get what you want, this is what you do. They just somehow came out of the chute.
Yeah.
And if they didn't get milk right away, I was like, rah! Like freaking out.
Yeah.
It's immediate.
Yep.
You have to train your kids. The only way to train them through guidelines is through consequences for them to understand.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't happen with our kids, why would it happen with us?
Yeah.
So Yahweh is a good father to say, I need to give them consequences, because in and of yourself, you're not going to naturally be like, yes, Dad.
Yeah.
No, if our kids don't do it, you're not that awesome.
Yep.
I'm not like, yes, Dad.
Yep.
Right? You have to be taught, like, anyways, I can go through examples, but anything that he's working on with you, it's hard to say yes, Dad, in the beginning, but if there's a consequence, you start to learn, ooh, that's what that yes, Dad means.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. So we come to Shabbat, which is the same pattern with the bitter waters and going into provision and rest. So here we have the same pattern. There was an exchange. The manna, you've got provision, and then you've got instructions. Because of the instructions, then you move into rest.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and with that rest is establishing what you've done. It's not so okay. So let me explain Shabbat. I'm just going to go through this really fast. All right, it is not a day to escape.
Yeah.
Shabbat is not your recharge for the next week for you to check out. That has nothing to do with Shabbat. In order to have Shabbat, you don't get Shabbat because you just get Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
This all goes back to the tree, because if and rests. And I want us to understand, well, never mind. I don't even know how to get into that. You can't have Shabbat unless you prepare for Shabbat.
Yeah.
So you have to prepare to enter into rest. What does the scripture say? You work to enter his rest.
Yep.
What the hell? What is that meant?
Right.
Work to enter his rest? Now you know.
Yeah.
This is super practical. Cook double on Friday.
Yeah.
You have to prepare for Shabbat. It says you're going to do double the work. It's not just you get a free day.
Yeah.
You got to do double on the day before in order to have rest on the next day.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing he provides is he lets it last. That's the only thing he changed. He didn't just say you get a free day. He said you're going to do double so that you can establish rest. Does this make any sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I want to just say this really quick just to kind of expand ourselves. This is bigger than your week. I want to be as practical as your week, but this is bigger than your week. Because I want us to understand what we're doing right now in our time.
Yeah.
If Tabernacles is 7 days, and that's prophetic, what happens on the eighth day? So if what is coming, or the millennium, has to do with rest, then what are we doing double of right now?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
A lot of us want what's later, and we haven't prepared for what's
yes.
to come.
Yeah.
So what if, I'm not getting into theology, it's just an opinion, I'm just talking, don't get weird on me about times. But what if we are in the sixth day?
Yeah.
Or, yes. And what's coming is rest. Then that would mean, as transitionaries, there's a concept of double portion preparation.
Yeah.
That's why we want to flow into his times on a weekly basis so that we can endure what it is that he's having us prepare for.
Oh,
David, Mom. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because if we go back to Joseph and we want to smell like him, there's a preparation that's coming to be ready to be smelled like. You can't expect to smell like him and have eternal rest if you didn't prepare.
Yes.
So there's a concept to we hone in on Shabbat, but you got to hone in on Friday.
Yeah.
Because in order to enter into Shabbat, you have to be intentional on Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, really quick, I'm just going to release a couple of things because I want us to understand that Shabbat, in a supernatural way, is teaching his people how to be effective and productive. It's his ways, not our ways. In the world, we think the more you work, the more productive you are.
Right.
What if that's not the case? You just need to be more effective.
Yeah.
And then you can have rest and you can have both.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's saying you're working less. It's just saying he's just saying you're being more effective because I need you to rest. Not work more. What I mean by that is that the miracle of being able to honor Shabbat, a lot of people say, there's no way in this world can I honor Shabbat. I need to do more. But I have personally seen in people miracles where more has come in by honoring his cycle and his ways.
Yeah.
So it is a feast. It is an honoring thing. It is an appointed time to be able to flow into.
Yeah.
Now, I say that because I want to just expand our minds a little bit. I'm just going to share a little thing. I have a book that I've been engaging, and it's just a Hebrew book that talks about time. There's over 20 chapters, and each chapter is a Hebrew word for the word time. That means, all I'm going to say for that is that means that time is beyond what's on this watch.
Yeah.
There's more to time than the hour, the minutes, and the seconds.
Yeah.
There's actually more than 20 words in the Hebrew that talk about time.
Yeah.
What I want us to expand into is to be a people that understand that beyond this time, if we can come out from being subject to the hour, he's going to teach us to govern the hour.
Yes. Yeah.
At least that's what he's been doing with me lately, is he's teaching me how to come out from under a system to govern a system. But to do that, I can't operate by this to a degree. I'm learning. That's why I say to a degree. But I can't operate. I can't let this tell me what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I have to tell that what I'm going to do. And in that, things start to shift and some supernatural things happen where I am starting to experience. Are you guys okay?
Yeah.
I'm starting to experience bending of time.
Yeah.
I can start a project and end the project earlier than I started. So, what if time is defined by how deep you live versus how much you do?
Yeah.
All I'm trying to do is to just expand yourself into the supernatural, because following his cycles and his ways is supernatural, and I just want us to understand that following his ordinances can be amazing. They're not restrictive. What do you mean? I can't work.
Yeah.
You know what
right.
I mean? Taking
right.
it like this is,
yes.
you know, or that's not for now, or he's my Shabbat, so I don't have to. Fine.
Yeah.
Fine. But I want his ways, not my ways.
Yeah.
And I want to learn how to come out of a system, and I can't do it if I don't follow his ways. So
yeah.
he teaches
yeah.
how to do it right here.
Yeah.
By
yeah.
saying, how can I be as productive in 6 days instead of seven? How do you do that? Well, he teaches you how to do it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So we want to break down the lie that you have to work more, produce more. That's not his pattern. He's going to teach us to go. And I released a little bit of this on Vox. But what he's going to teach us is beyond our lie of I have no time. I have no time.
Yeah.
I have no time. I have
yeah.
no time. I talked about this on Vox. Be careful about what you're framing.
Yeah.
Even if you don't,
right.
say you do.
Yeah.
I have all the time. I can get it all in. You are gonna teach me how to drive. You're gonna my appointed time. Right? You just again, gratitude versus complaining. I am the
yeah.
first person. I gotta go first. I'm the first one to complain and be like, I can't do it. I have no time. I can't. And then being able to shift into gratitude, so I'm not distorting the past.
Yeah.
Past is a time. I'm not distorting the last hour. My whole last hour was so ineffective.
Yeah.
Take this. I'm distorting the past right there in order
yeah.
to justify my complaint.
Yep.
I'm creating my past to justify what I'm irritated about.
Yep.
Instead of being grateful, I had another hour. I got another hour. I was effective with my hour. You start
yeah.
to change into gratitude. Now all of a sudden you're not distorting the past.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? And there's so much, because then that goes into my anxiety, and then I'm prophesying the future. It didn't even happen, right? I'm distorting
yep.
the past in order to change
yep.
my future.
Yep.
In the negative.
Yeah.
Amen?
Yeah.
All right. This is the hope that we have in leaving a system.
Yeah.
What has been Pharaoh and what are his ways? So think beyond, because these instructions are going to lead us into the how.
Yeah.
I'm done. Well, I want to share with you guys, just as she was preaching through all of that, in the beginning, we talked about how this is really an equipping of who we are, patterns, understanding dynamics of what it means to be a crossover people. And just in listening intently to what was dispensed tonight, for me personally, I feel like I got revelation and clarity on fear, trauma,
uh-huh.
anxiety,
yeah.
the way that I view what an opportunity is,
yep.
what I think my destiny is and how I'm going to get there,
yeah.
how big of a deal daily discipline is,
yeah.
which totally relates to how I view opportunities, and how provision can really be unprecedented, which I've felt like that my whole life, but didn't really have the words to articulate it or connected the dot to manna being a level of provision that nobody had ever seen before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody could even describe what that was.
Yeah.
And that's just the ones that I could think of that I wrote down real quick. So, and I share that just to make the point that we should be, I mean, it's just like manna, right? Like there's all this opportunity that we can grab a hold of. And there could be a lie. You know, she spent a lot of time to dispense all that information, and I don't have the time to consume all of that. I don't have the time to go back and like, right? You can already be leaving, already doing what she's
yeah.
saying don't
yeah.
do with your time.
Yeah, that's true.
So I just, as we hear from Amber and we go into communion and we posture ourselves for communion, just really try to make your mind a clean slate
yeah.
and allow these things to just settle on your spirit, on your mind. And I would challenge everybody to go through each day this week. Look at each and every day as the window of time that he says,
yeah.
I am providing for you this day, everything you need. It's all over the place. There's opportunity everywhere.
Yeah.
And I have the time, right? Like, I mean,
yeah.
I just wanted to share with you guys, I'm going to consume every bit of this so that I can appropriate it and see how it impacts all those areas of my life, so I can be a crossover people in every single one of those areas.
Yeah.
Right. And we should all be doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, you're jacking me up with that one. Are you gonna bring
that? No. I was just saying I was gonna bring up trauma with distorting the past.
Yeah.
And what how we can even utilize the things to justify moving forward.
Yep.
Those things.
Yeah.
And the power that we have to be able to change.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Well, just launching off of that, something that really stood out was obviously just that provision and opportunity can be wasted.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys can all hear just the warning in that of just the intentionality and the daily discipline that takes to walk out that level of provision and seeing that there's something that he has for us in stepping out of a system every single day and that there's provision that is unrecognizable, unseen, unheard of, untapped, untouched, that's obtainable in every moment of the day. And just thinking of like even just practically, like if we're recognizing that double work in advance to be able to enter into a state of rest, like practically I'm just thinking about like retirement, like what work needs to be done up in advance to get to a place where you can genuinely step into a place of rest when you retire.
Yeah.
And if we're living beyond 100, like there's like a double work that we definitely need to like be operating in and be in that double place of intentionality to continue to walk those things out. And so I was just thinking practically, like even just as we're being intentional with each seed that we sow, that we're looking for those, I mean twos always stick out to me, but we're looking for those doubles, that those pieces of provision that he's saying, like as you work in doubles, I will match your double. I will match you. And so us choosing to be intentional in each one of those moments is how we can continue to just kind of walk all that out. So
yeah.
We'll do communion and then, or I'm sorry, we'll do tithes and then we'll do communion when everybody's ready.
Do you want first fruits in terms of, oh my God.
Yes.
I just made it in the same bucket.
Yes. And thank you, Mom. First fruits also can go in the bucket. Speaking of intentionality and not forgetting, no, but just being intentional of like what, like when she's talking about trading and that exchange of like, there's provision, but it's also going to come with a requirement.
Yeah.
Like what is he doing in that exchange of your first fruit as well?
Yeah.
So just being intentional to think through that as well.
Yeah.
When you add that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, so as we get ready for communion, just a couple of things to think about and meditate on as we consume him. One being, when we talk about being transitionaries, one thing that she said that stood out to me that just brings me freedom in a sense about who we are, is that as transitionary, she said on the sixth day, you have to do double to prepare. And we've been talking a lot about preparedness, and a lot of people over the years have thought, you know, what is the intensity? What's the urgency? What's the, I can't think of other words to put on it, but almost like just calm down, right? Like that's the feeling that we've gotten from people as a criticism over the years. And when I heard her say that as transitionaries, we are like constantly on the eve or positioned to doubly prepare to enter his rest. Like that's who we are. So it gives you like a firm foundation to stand on when those criticisms do come or those questions do come of why the urgency, why the intensity, because we're going to be the ones with oil in our lamps when he shows up at the door.
Yeah.
And people are going to be scrambling, come into the people that are prepared.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why it's always so intense. That's why it's always so urgent. That's why it's like you've got to consume what you're getting each and every day.
Yeah.
Right? Building upon everything that we're learning. And so the other thing I wanted to say about that as an example in Scripture is it makes me think of Yeshua going to his disciples before he goes to Gethsemane to pray. Mm-hmm. And his disciples, I mean, you would think like they're the cream of the crop, right? The closest 12 to him, right? The closest people to him. But he took 3 people with him to go pray because most of them couldn't stay awake. And so it just makes me think when we talk about preparedness and we talk about the requirement and the work and everything, that it's an honorable place to be.
Yeah.
Because when you're in, when you embrace that, you get, can you imagine being in that garden with him, knowing that the other disciples were sleeping, but you got to go with him to pray with him?
Yeah.
While he's sweating blood, about to do what he was called to do, about to cross over, the biggest crossover of his life, and you get to be with him. 3 people.
Yeah.
I mean, it just speaks to the remnant.
Yeah.
Right? It just speaks to really what is the remnant.
Yeah.
And so as we take communion, you know, just take a few minutes, you know, proclaim that this Torah portion be written on your heart and that it would be established, but really think about those things because it is about our identity, and our identity has always been, there's always been an element of, you know, people have even said, can't we just stop with the urgency and the intensity for like a week? And we're like, no, we have never, we can't, we cannot. That's just part of who we are. She can't help it. It's just part of who we are. I almost feel to the point of if you don't bear witness with that, it is not going to relent.
Yeah.
Like this family is relentless.
Mm-hmm.
We are relentless. Amen?
Amen.
So go ahead and take your time to do communion.
All right, you guys. Okay, I see everybody finishing up here with communion. So as far as this word and being able to move from this place, what we're carrying, can everyone feel the shift that's happening in the concept of his requirements? Yes, I feel like that has been tangible. I feel like I can feel the family, like I can feel us and some things starting to shift in our mindsets and in our heart's positions when it comes to receiving his requirements. Because if this portion is the beginning, right, meaning it's the introduction, this is just the starting place of those requirements beginning to really be introduced in the manner that they are, where it's direct. You don't have to obey, but here is what I require. Here is what I expect. You choose, and then we'll see, right? We'll see what happens. That there has been so much time for us to prepare and to come into alignment of those requirements so that he can release them over us. And now here we are, and that shift that's happening, I feel like, is that hope. That it's not this grumbling, or that there won't be this grumbling, this complaining, but he is leading us in the how, and that shift in requirement is moving into provision. Meaning the mindset shift in us is the requirement isn't grumble, but it's gratitude because we're receiving it as his provision. Mm-hmm. That his instructions aren't for your destruction, mm-hmm. or what feels like this demolishing of your, the joy and the whatever else we attribute it to in our lives, but it's literally the receiving of his provision. And that there is the more that we can find hope and grab a hold of that in the being led how, the more that they're gonna come. It's like, it's just, it's going, I can feel a momentum beginning in us as a family where that distance is going to just shrink down, like what we were speaking to at the beginning of service. It's going to start to shrink down the more that we activate that kind of a mindset. Okay, bring on the direction, bring on the instruction, bring on the requirements, not, oh my gosh, I have to forsake this or lay this down. Oh my gosh, I have to, now I'm losing this. Oh my gosh, now you're taking this away. Oh, right? When we shift fully out of that into bring on your requirement, because it's all an adding to and it's all out of the abundance of your provision.
Yeah.
That is going to shift everything in this house. I mean, all of that synergizing we talk about, it is going, momentum is going to build as we shift out of how we used to receive into what it really means. So when we talk about preparation, when we talk about readiness, the intensity, we can understand now why that's never been something that can be sacrificed, right? Because it's all a part of who we are, but also who he requires us to be. And that is everything to do with how good he is and who he is and how he is. And we get to begin to eat of that and taste that and see that and that it's good.
Yeah.
Yes. So along with that, when it comes to readiness, when it comes to hope, when it comes to joy, I could go on and on about all of the ways that mom and dad have come under that mindset or have developed that mindset in order to lead us in that same hope that I get excited about something like ascending into an expansion assignment because I understand what that's unto then.
Yeah.
Meaning all of the time that they have is spent in that intensity, is spent in that place of understanding, what does this mean? What is this unto? What are we in need of so that we can continue? All of those things get activated in these expansion assignments. And so we just want to send them, since they will be leaving next week, and pray over them. Amber and Jay, can we have you do that? And mom and dad, can you guys just get, can we all just kind of close in?
Can I say one thing before we pray?
Of course.
I just want to make sure that this is clear. I think it is, but as you guys dive into the next Torah portion, if this is the beginning of instructions, realize in this last Torah portion, I apologize, I'm my retainer's in, so I'm lisping.
You're good.
But this last Torah portion, who was introduced to us? So the beginning of all instructions started with water
mm-hmm.
and bread.
Mm-hmm.
It's him.
Yeah.
He's the beginning of all things. So
yeah.
Even in the instruction that we've been taught is against him,
mm-hmm.
he's the beginning of it. Every Torah portion has always and will always point to the Messiah.
Yeah.
And if we did
yeah.
not see the Messiah in this Torah portion, he references this Torah portion over
yeah.
and over and over again about who he is.
Yeah.
So how can the instructions be against him if he's the beginning of instructions?
Yeah.
So just to have that as the foundation that, you know, drinking of him, that's why he says you'll never thirst.
Yep.
Is because he knows that you're going to be one that obeys.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
you're going to drink of him. You
yeah.
know, that you're going to let your bitter waters become sweet and that you're going to eat of him daily because he says, I am the bread of life. That's what it means to not live by bread alone, but to live by his bread. So
yeah.
he is the foundation of all instructions. And that was in this Torah portion.
Yeah.
So.
Good.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.
Good night, family. I hope this helps you walk out in joy.
Oh.
Yes, I nailed that.